If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on, you know. And that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
What interesting times we live in. Welcome to the Russ Betts Show. Good to have you with us. Coming to you from downtown Palm Springs, California. Very quiet Palm Springs, California. Our studio happens to be right next to the airport, and I did hear a jet this morning. I don't know how many people are on it, but the one took off. It sent people somewhere. Rental cars are surrounding and wrapping this airport, occupying every available square inch of parking. I've never seen so many rental cars. Well, they're out there all the time. They're just not being rented. So anyhow, all right, we're going to get on with this one. Stress, wow. You know, you really feel it sometimes. And, you know, businesses have good and difficult times. They have ups and downs, and the downs come with serious consequences sometimes. For example, if a house is securing the business, if you put your house up as, you know, capitalization for the business loan you use to get the business going, or maybe you wanted to expand, you know, it could be a pretty stressful time when things take a downturn. You ever know someone whose business failed and then they lost their house? Might not always be because they lost their income from the business and they couldn't end up making the house payment. It could be because the house was securing a bank loan for the business and the business could not make the payment. In that case, the business owner that put his house up as collateral finds himself with a whopping unmanageable payment far in excess of what would have to be paid to keep up the house. Anyhow, it's, you know, you can hear the conversations when that happens. Hi, honey, remember those papers I had you sign when we guaranteed the loan, you know, when we used our house to guarantee the business loan? Well, I think we're going to have to move out of the house. You know, our business faced some tough times. We didn't lose any houses and it didn't fail, but there were some tough times and you learn what stress is about. You know, in my case, I went to sleep at night in the middle of my sleep and I would let out these audible sighs, like big, long sighs of relief, and I was de-stressing in my sleep. We're facing some tough times. A family business was secured by family home. And by the way, don't ever do that. If you need money for your business, rule number one is do not use your house to secure your business. If your business fails and you still own your house, you just go back there and you lick your wounds, but at least you're not licking your wounds while you're moving everything out and trying to figure out where else you're going to live. Lots of people do that. It's a mistake. They think there's nowhere else to get money, and for some of them, there isn't. But I just do not recommend it. Anyhow, you learn to deal with stress. And so now I'm dealing with this COVID situation, but it's in a completely different arena. I'm no longer in business. I've retired. We sold that business long ago, and so it's not because I'm going to lose my house. It's because of the calls I'm getting. For those of you who don't know, my regular job is as a city council member up in the city of Desert Hot Springs. We do this radio show to basically keep you informed. I'm getting calls. You know, I had a call with a guy, he's a farmer. And he was saying, nobody's eating, you know, they can't slaughter the beef. So the cows are, well, like, they're slaughtering the cows, but they're not going anywhere. Anyhow, the price of, he makes his money off of hay. He says hay is at half the price it was. And he doesn't know how he's going to survive at half the price of the hay. And he said, in the town where it is, it's pretty much an agricultural part of California. And he's hurting. Then you get calls from, from salon owners. You know, hair salon owners. We have a hair salon, so I get those calls. And we have a lot of conversations on that. We'll get into some of that later in the show. But the, salon owners are going, hey, I'm not sure how much longer I can stay shut down. You know, maybe a week I can handle. 2 weeks was stretching it. Now, what are we into, 8 weeks? And who knows when they're going to be able to reopen. Same with a lot of other businesses out there, the bars, the restaurants, catering companies, all kinds of people out there. And then you have the people that don't qualify for unemployment. I'm getting their calls. You know, the calls I used to get were, hey, how do I sign up for the benefits? Can you help me? I hear we got some good benefits coming. Now the calls I'm getting are, I'm out of money and I'm running out of food. And they're, instead of like, you know, hey, how do I sign up for these benefits? There's a desperation in the voice of the people calling. So anyway, yesterday I was feeling that stress. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just going, wow, you know, it overwhelmed me. And I was talking to a friend on the phone about something else. He says, Russ, you okay? You know, I guess he could hear it in my voice. Like I could hear it in the voices of people calling me. And I just finished talking to that farmer and I'm just thinking to myself, wow, you know, there's a lot of lives that are being changed. And I'm not sure everybody fully grasped, what's coming. You know, we had a guest on last week, Bill Effinger, who wrote a book, America, Are You Ready? Surviving the Great Depression. And, you know, basically Bill's assessment as having lived through the Great Depression is that what we got coming now is way worse. And I don't know what to think on that one. I can sure see the signs. I mean, when you got airlines, like we just mentioned, all grounded, rental car companies grounded, cities are going to start feeling some real financial stress if they aren't already. And, of course, everybody out that's out of work. I mean, even the people who are getting unemployment. Some of them, I talked to one guy, he says, well, you know, this is okay. I wasn't making $4,000 a month before, but I am now on unemployment, so that's good. But he knew it's not going to last. In July, those benefits run out. And so he's sitting there thinking to himself, maybe I better not be spending too much money right now. I need to save because who knows if I'm going to be able to find work in July. There's a lot of people out there talking about, you know, what's going on. And so then now here come these symptoms of anxiety and stress. And, you know, it's just, there's a lot out there. You get excessive worrying. You're feeling agitated. You're restless, you got fatigue, you got difficulty concentrating, irritability, tense muscles, trouble falling asleep. And then you got a governor coming on the news saying, we've got to do this properly. We've got to take care of it. And business owners are going out, sitting at home, losing their businesses, making no money. I'm saying, okay, great, I'm on board. I'm doing what you said. And, you know, I heard these offers of help and relief. And I thought, all right, well, as long as I can at least cover my bills. But then nothing came through. Nothing. You know, you heard about this SBA loan. You know, every business could get $10,000. Just sign up and you got it. The money be deposited in your account almost instantly. Well, nothing got deposited. When you start wondering what's going on, you get another email that says, hi, by the way, well, you're not going to get a $10,000. You're going to get $1,000 per employee. So somebody who's got a hair salon with them as their employee, I mean, they were eligible for that, said, nope, $1,000. Well, that's not going to cut it. My rent's $3,000 or $4,000 a month. You know, great, thanks. The payroll protection plan dried up real quick. Now we got a plan, maybe a restaurant says, hey, maybe I can make some money. Governor just came out with a new plan to feed elderly using restaurants. Well, it's not the regular menu. It's a whole new menu. It's a healthy menu. You know, any drinks that must be sent to the elderly must be 100% fruit juice, no sugary drinks like soda pop, whatever else. And the guy's going, okay, so I'm going to fire up all of my production in my restaurant to go serve these people, the elderly, get this going, at least maybe thinking to get my business going, and then, you know, find out that there's all these restrictions on the menu, nothing's the regular menu, and you don't just change your menu up that quickly to start doing this stuff. You become a cafeteria. And, you know, you got, you know, restaurants, a lot of them, I don't think you realize, they aren't on credit with the suppliers that bring them their food and their supplies. They got to pay cash. And if they've been sitting 8 weeks without cash, well, maybe the very wealthy, well-to-do, you know, very strong restaurants might be able to take care of this. But they're not having problems anyhow. The ones that are having problems are the ones that were, you know, like most restaurants, struggling to get by. Now, we manufactured for the food service industry. And as a manufacturer selling to distributors, that was the, man, you never had credit problems because all the distributors had a real tight lock on restaurants. Restaurants are the number one failing business. And they know they don't extend a lot of credit. So, you know, okay, hi, lay out some cash to help the governor's program. And then is the governor's program going to run out of money? Because that seems to be a trend. You got the, you know, they had this program where homeless could go get a hotel room. And so I knew a couple of people that needed a place. And, you know, the concern was, well, they're going to be out there. They don't have a place to wash their hands. They, you know, we need to increase the hygiene. And can we get them a place to stay? So I try and help a couple of people. And I got the number and I told them to call. And I said, get back to me, you know, monitor this. So they get back. I said, well, what happened? They said, well, they're out of money. They're out of money. I said, that can't be. So I called up the program. He says, oh, yeah, that lasted 2 weeks. So, you know, you got a governor up there giving these press conferences saying how wonderful things is and all that he's doing to help people. And it's a big, long laundry list. I looked at it all. None of it's funded. None of it's funded. So, you know, a business can survive 2 bad weeks in a row, maybe. Now you're talking 8 weeks. 8 weeks with zero income, lots of promises, zero income. You know, the frustration is starting to mount. You know, California remains closed, but, you know, when is a business going to be allowed to reopen again? And when they do, it's going to be slow going. At the same time, it's more costly to operate. There's going to be requirements for businesses. They're going to require them to spend money. First off, there'll be state protocols to open. So that means buying supplies and other things, you know, the hand sanitizer, the wipes, the new procedures, extra employees to open doors, whatever it takes. So anyhow, it's there's just been no help. There really has been no help. And it's not right. So that's why you see some businesses starting to open up. And there's one in San Clemente, says, well, there's a bunch of them, I guess, but some Orange County restaurants and shops reopen despite statewide orders. And Nomad's Canteen in San Clemente is open up for business. And I'm looking at a picture here, and you got people sitting around a table, and they've got their enjoying plates of food. And I see here they've got some beers in their hand, and there's all a bunch of other people at the restaurant. And you know, they just opened up. And what's it say here? It says, Nomad's Canteen is one of the most high-profile examples of Orange County businesses that reopened in recent days despite ongoing orders from Governor Newsom, and no help from Governor Newsom, that restaurants only offer. Anyhow, they opened up, all right? And the guy says, hey, I got people calling me saying I have blood on my hands and that the grandma's going to die. That's what Jeffrey Gourley, the Nomad's Canteen owner, said. There's a backlash he's received, but you know, he says, I'm not forcing anyone to come here. If you don't feel the way we do, just stay home. Now, I know that people are very concerned about this pandemic and the loss of life and the risk. That doesn't satisfy it for them because it really doesn't answer the question, and that's the conundrum everybody's in. All right. Well, I see we've got some new bumper music, and okay. You know, I kind of like the old one, but hey, good to freshen things up a little bit here. Can you hear that? I'll turn it up a little bit for you. There you go. This is the Russ Betts Show on iHubRadio coming to you back with a whole lot more. We're here till noon.
Live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, you know, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you, you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHubRadio.
Oh, good thing I'm here in the studio alone. I forgot to turn off my mic. I hope I didn't say anything I didn't. I'm alone. No, I'm not alone. I'm with all of you. Welcome to the Russ Betts Show. Good to have you with us. Still getting used to that new bumper music. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. studio@ihubradio.com. That's studio@ihubradio.com. We do see your emails. Thank you to those who write in. I don't often respond, but I just want you to know I see them. And if there's something there worth responding to, well, They're all worth responding to, but I just kind of get caught up in letting you know what we're talking about. And, well, what we're talking about is, right now, anyhow, is a restaurant in San Clemente, California that decided to open up his restaurant despite Governor Newsom and state orders to close. And he says, you know, we're not trying to be rebels or anything. We've got bills to pay. And so he said he applied for a loan through the federal stimulus plan, but hasn't heard anything back. And he said businesses like his and the people that depend on them, you know, they can only hang for so long if they're forced to stay closed. And I'm reading a quote. Where's this out of Orange County Register? You love the California quotes. You know, it's a beach city. Hey, we can only hang so long. Anyhow, there's other shops also that that haven't closed. And you got one is a Richardal Women's Clothing Boutique in San Clemente. And she says she's a single mom with kids and can't afford to lose her business. And so she's reopening. And I guess the Orange County Sheriff's Department did send deputies that were accompanied by inspectors with the county's health agency during the visit to Nomad's Canteen on Friday afternoon. After they received complaints, the restaurant had violated the stay-at-home orders. And so they didn't offer any comment on that. And the San Clemente restaurant, he said, you know, I closed when I was ordered to in March. And he said, but, you know, his orders just kept getting extended, and there's no end in sight and no help. So he opened back up. Now, you know, that raises a question. What happens if these businesses open up? And, you know, I have a lot of people sitting there saying, well, you know, Governor Newsom's just going to close them all back down. Well, Governor Newsom has what's called the California State Police. And that was founded in 1887. And it was basically a police agency which served to protect the state capitol building, the governor, and other state agencies located throughout the state. Must have been some other protest at the time, maybe over railroads gobbling up land. Who knows? It was back in 1887. And eventually, the California State Police merged with the California Highway Patrol, and that was in 1995. Now, the California Highway Patrol is the largest state police agency in the United States, and it has 7,500 sworn officers. Now, they also have the authority to arrest, you know, for the same crimes in a city as the local city police do. And you know, they have the authority to give you orders. Now, you compare those 7,500 to the Huntington Beach Police Department, and the Huntington Beach Police Department has about 212 sworn positions. So 7,500 versus 212. Well, of course, you know, the governor's police force covers the entire state. But they do have the ability to swarm Huntington Beach and, well, I guess San Clemente and wherever else somebody is defiant and, you know, do what they got to do. But if you take a look at how policing is handled throughout California, it's not with the state police and the 7,500 sworn officers of the Highway Patrol. It's done by 119,500 local police officers. So just say there's 120,000 local police officers providing local policing all over the state. And 78,500 of those are sworn officers. So the state police force is about 10% compared to the local police. Now, what's all that got to do with anything? Well, the question came up is, well, what if everybody just defies the order? And somebody said, well, the governor will send in the highway patrol and or send in the police and shut them down. But by sheer numbers, if everybody opened up, the governor really is pretty much powerless to do anything because it really comes down to a local decision. And so, you know, you're sitting there, you point your finger at the governor, but I can hear the rest of my fellow council members saying, shh, don't tell him this, don't tell him this, but I'm going to tell you. It's a local decision whether or not to use city resources to go enforce laws. And, you know, there's lots and lots of laws on the books. And not every one of them is enforced. And so, you know, hey, a restaurant, you're ordered to close. Do you send the police there to deal with that one? I don't know. But it's a local decision. It's a city manager, a mayor, a city council, a police chief deciding all the time, every day, which laws to enforce and which ones they can't. You know, the legislature's really busy writing laws, but the police are just as busy trying to enforce them, but they can't enforce all of them. The legislature is much more active, much more productive at writing the laws than the police are at handling all of them. So anyhow, the governor, I guess he could send out the National Guard to close the restaurants in the Orange County beaches. And the National Guard, in case you're wondering, has 23,000 soldiers and airmen. So that's, again, compared to 120,000 police officers. But their National Guard, those guys have tanks. The National Guard, they can restore order. I don't know how they're going to do, you know, trying to close a restaurant if they're so equipped. I think they probably just do it, one block at a time. Hi, sorry, this block is closed. All right, this is Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio, coming to you from Palm Springs. We're back with more.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Hold on a minute. I'm doing a social media post here. I haven't quite finished writing it up. You guys just got to hold a minute. All right. I'll wait. We'll finish this one up at the next break. I know. I'm just trying to keep you entertained here. Come on, give me a break. All right, so we're talking about, Governor Newsom and his state police, totaling about 7,500 and consisting of the California Highway Patrol and then another 23,000 National Guard at his disposal. Well, that's a pretty serious, move to make to call out the National Guard to close down a restaurant, and who knows, but the question came up, if everybody all over the state just said, hey governor, thanks, keep doing your press conferences, we're gonna open, he's gonna be sitting there saying, well, you gotta wait to open. Well, sorry, we already did. Well, we're starting to see that happen, and I think in anticipation of some of this, the governor sent out a notification to all the chief of the law enforcement divisions of Cal OES. I don't know what OES stands for. But they were joining a call with the California Highway Patrol Commissioner Warren Stanley and representatives of California State Parks and the local police. This went out and it said, on the subject of, can you enforce the state orders, in case you're wondering. He said, our legal counsel, Jim Touchstone, sent out a legal alert about the governor's order a few weeks back, and it outlined the government and health and safety codes that apply to law enforcement's ability to enforce and cite those who try to defy the orders. It's attached for your reference. So the governor had his legal counsel send out an order, says, by the way, in case you're wondering if you can enforce a state order, well, you can. But the question is, what if they don't? And you have lots and lots of examples of, people saying, hey, maybe we don't agree, and we're not going to do it. I mean, you certainly saw those protests. Well, we got a Riverside County supervisor who came out, and basically the whole Riverside County Board of Supervisors decided that, we're going to relax things. Now, technically, I believe they still are following the state guidelines, but Supervisor Jeff Hewitt from the 5th District went so far as to issue a press release. It says, over the course of the shutdown, thousands of businesses have closed their doors, many of which will never reopen, and hundreds of thousands of hardworking people have been forced to stay home and not earn a living for their families. And he says he's had enough. He says, I'm going to be calling on my fellow county supervisors to help me lift all, and all is emphasized, economic restrictions on our county. He says he's not going to sit idly by and be consumed by fear. And I don't know if that's where it's going, if that's what the situation is, but, did the surge ever happen? I'm not going to get into all that right now. And even he says, make no mistake, COVID-19 is a serious illness and we must continue to be vigilant and use common sense practices. Social distancing is going to play a vital role. We've got to protect the most vulnerable among us. And he's asking for industry experts to set guidelines for business and consumers to voluntarily follow. But he says it's critically important that we get the economy and everybody else back to work. So I paraphrase some of that. You can go online and find it, but there certainly is a, and you know, on that subject of the setting up guidelines, there's been a couple of task forces that have been set up. I think a local one, a state one. They're all working on writing protocols. And at the top of the hour, we're going to get a little look at that when we have Joe Wallace of the Coachella Valley Economic Partnership will be joining us, basically to let us know what they're working on. The idea is that, once everybody opens, let's get some planning in place. Once we've been told we can open, well, we're not just going to flip on a switch. Nobody is saying we're just going to flip on a switch and get back to work. Well, I guess a restaurant in San Clemente did, but even they're using gloves and masks and following certain protocols. But the thinking in the government is, you know, we need to have a plan in place. Even the Coachella Valley Chamber of Commerce came out with a, you know, hey, guys, we got to get back to work. So if we're going to have to get back to work, let's not wait until we're told to do it to come up with these protocols. Let's do them now. And there we go. All right, we're going to switch off to another subject. And, post-traumatic stress syndrome or disorder in soldiers is a tough one. The same as for first responders. You know, they see a lot. And there's some really big news coming out of the Coachella Valley as there is a federally approved research and development laboratory for medical marijuana. Now, put those two words together and you're going to see the significance, federal and marijuana, and then add the word approved. Now, the company that's getting set up in the Coachella Valley contracts with the federal government and for the cannabinoid-related treatments and development of research and development, and they have a GSA license, a Government Services Administration license, and they're the only ones. So the development facility will be used to create non-addictive drugs for pain and opioid addiction, sleep apnea, PTSD, and other medical conditions. The company is called Royal Emerald Pharmaceuticals, and it's a research and development pharmaceutical facility, and it's going to be located in Desert Hot Springs. Apparently, they went all over the valley looking at the different cities, and they settled in on Desert Hot Springs. It's going to be a $15 million investment in a corporate headquarters, and where it's going to occupy is a former big box retail store, Kmart, that had closed down a few months back. And they're going to do the tenant improvements and the build-out, which have already begun. I mean, as soon as this deal was announced and the ink was penned, you know, the deal was inked, construction fencing went up, and a work crew started to convert the old Kmart building into, well, this new $15 million corporate headquarters that's going to hire 50 people by late summer. It's going to be doing R&D work, and the project eventually is going to go to 90 employees, and it's going to be, you know, different skilled level positions, entry level, and then all the way up to skilled scientific positions paying good wages. So, not everything is closed. Here's something opening. And that's just the R&D part of the operation. There's going to be a new corporate headquarters that's going to start, and that'll have 20 to 25 people. Now, as I said, the company searched Coachella Valley cities and it settled on Desert Hot Springs. And I think the reason for that is way back when our council took a look at the zoning in our city and thought, you know, maybe we need to clear this up, that there's going to be testing labs and research and development facilities that, well, the thinking was, you know, they're not much different than, say, LabCorp or Quest, and so why wouldn't they be allowed in the commercial district? Well, city attorneys being what they are saying, well, you know, we need to make sure the language is clear. So 2 or 3 years ago, we said, okay, get on it, get the language clear. And the city took steps to make sure that everything was going. Now, I don't think we had any idea anything like this coming. This one actually happened pretty quickly. But, hey, we did it. We got that ordinance in place. We got the zoning in place. And there we go. And there's the big news. Federal marijuana. When have you heard that? Hey, that's good. That's good. All right. Now, there's been a testing facility in the Coachella Valley set up by the Public Health Department or the Emergency Management Department, whatever they're called out of the county. And that's way down at the Indio Fairgrounds. And, you know, for those people on the west end of the valley, that's a 30-minute-plus drive to get down there. Well, there's now a second testing site going to get set up on the west end, and that one's going to turn out to be in Desert Hot Springs. So instead of everybody having to take that long drive down to Indio, you can just take a short drive if you live here on the west end and head on out. And I think part of this has to do with summer coming, and the outdoor testing locations are presenting a challenge. I mean, at 100 degrees, sitting out in a tent and doing testing with full personal protective equipment on, well, you can see that, you know, an air-conditioned facility would be better, and they were in quite a hurry to get it done. They said they needed the answer quickly, and the city said, yes, okay, great, we've got this facility, the Lozano Center. That's what was chosen. And testing's going to begin soon. I'm hearing it could be as soon as this Tuesday. So, and the testing will be Monday through Friday, or Tuesday through Saturday. I guess they haven't settled that one yet, but it's going to be from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And they're going to provide all the staffing and everything else. So there you go. If you need to get, you want to get the test done. I mean, that's a big part of all this. Everybody's saying, well, we need to get these tests going. And so, you know, we'll see what happens there. I'm going to reach for the rest of this stack here. Okay. You know, well, at least there's something to report besides COVID. There's actually a bunch of other stuff here. I want to get to this one here. We may as well get back to it. Red Bluff City Council unanimously votes to loosen stay-at-home restrictions amid COVID-19. Now, that vote took place on Friday, April 24th, so it was about a week ago. And they discussed joining a letter to the governor over the stay-at-home order. And they are the second group of the North State to ask the governor to reopen economies during the coronavirus pandemic. And the first was in Glenn County. So the vote went 4-0 in favor of it. I guess they had one council member who was absent. But they have just one confirmed case of coronavirus, and it had 167 negative tests. And the one who had it passed away, so that's serious. But the council decided, you know what, you got us locked down, and that's just not enough for all these stay-home restrictions, so they're sending a letter. I don't know if they're going any further than that. The Red Bluff City Council is asking businesses to send their plans for reopening to the council, and they will take it up. And that comes to us from KRCR News 7 covered that one. So, all right. And then out of Willows, California, you got the other ones that are doing, oh, the Glenn County Supervisors. They've discussed the same thing. And you got a lot of people out there who are talking about wanting to open up, and Governor Newsom's got a four-point plan or four-stage plan. And so, all right, we'll see what happens. San Francisco Bay Area counties, now they seem to be more on board with the governor. They imposed the first stay-at-home orders in California. They've just loosened a little bit. Well, this article here says they're joining a growing list of local governments that are relaxing restrictions they imposed. Now, to be clear, these are restrictions they imposed above and beyond what the governor ordered. And the way the law goes is that cities and counties are free to make the laws more stringent as they see fit than what the governor orders. But they can't pass laws that the state doesn't agree with or ordinances. So what you're seeing is a relaxing of the standards that were put into place above and beyond, besides the local defiance, and then the question of what's going to happen. I imagine those cities that are in full agreement with the governor are going to be very aggressive at enforcement. And those that say, you know, I'm sorry, we just don't agree, well, they say, Governor, bring in the National Guard if you want. I don't know if that's going to happen, but anyhow, they... The San Francisco public health officials say it's still not safe for people to share a ball, so they're not going to allow tennis. Okay, I guess you're hitting the ball back and forth, and there's a fear that as you touch the ball before you serve it with the racket, that you could spread the coronavirus. All right. Well, we'll see what happens on that one. Well, another one. California City plans to allow additional businesses to open. What's going on here? Everybody's opening up. I saw a governor's announcements that it wasn't going to happen. It'd be another couple of months. That's what we're hearing.
Thank you for educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is The Russ Betts Show.
All right, I want to thank our station owner for putting my new bumper music together. I might say I'm a little more humble than that, but okay, you know, we'll take it. Thank you. All right. Well, we've been talking, as usual, as expected, a lot of stuff about the COVID crisis and the economy, and you know, it's hitting a lot of people really, really hard. And I don't want to dismiss the people that are getting hard by the actual virus itself. The death toll is tragic. It seems to be the most insidious virus, and that you know, one day you're fine, and 5 days later, you didn't survive, you're dead. And we've seen many, many cases of that. People just going about their daily lives. And they say, well, it only hits the, you know, those people with pre-existing conditions. Well, you know, pretty much anybody in their late 50s, early 60s has got pre-existing conditions. You youngins, you don't realize it, but it gets a little harder to get up out of bed in the morning when you get older. And so, you know, I guess if we call those pre-existing conditions, but that doesn't mean anybody was going to keel over 5 days later. So yeah, this one's serious. And you know, you look at the numbers, they don't lie. Not a lot of people are looking at the number of cases being reported, and they see it going up, and they're, oh my God, there's more and more cases. Well, there's probably 10 times, 100 times more cases than what you see reported. They've only tested a few people, and the more testing, the more cases. The critical numbers are the hospitalizations and, of course, the death rate and those that are in ICU. So anyhow, certainly this is a very, very serious virus, and, you know, we've taken a lot of steps to control it. But those steps are having a devastating effect on the economy, on people's livelihood. And everybody, you know, I hear often, well, what about, well, you want to put money over life? And that's not what's going on here. If you think this is money over life, then you need to take a minute, take a breath, and you go look at the death rate when poverty sweeps a country. You know, you've got healthcare providers that are providing free dental to youth. And, you know, all right, well, you know, that's not death. But, you know, when we get done with all this, that healthcare provider may be gone. And then you're going to be sitting there with a kid with a toothache or bad teeth, and you're not going to know where to take them because there won't be anywhere. I mean, it takes a good economy to provide this stuff. You got hospitals in bad shape. They may not be able to provide what they need to. And then don't discount the fact that people who would normally go in for screenings aren't getting them. And we all know that early detection in cancer is really important. And then we got all the hair salons closed down. Everybody says, oh, well, that's just a fun, happy place to go get a haircut. And I'm having a bad hair day for months. And I'd like to get a haircut. But I don't think people realize how much hairdressers and stylists and cosmetologists and barbers are trained to scan for certain things. Like, for example, skin cancer. You know, it's plenty of hairstylists who've noticed the first signs of skin cancer on the tops of the ears or in the scalp above the hairline. You know, a lot of cancers are itchy and mimic dandruff. And so you might think if you're not there and you got an itchy head, well, I'll just go get some dandruff shampoo and that'll take care of it, but it doesn't go away. Well, that's because you've got some, you know, cancerous growth there you need to get looked at. And I mean, so I'm not trying to make the case that, you know, hairstylists and cosmetologists and barbers are on the front line you know, medical screenings. But there you go, as another example of the time that we're away from normal and this devastating economy. And just, I covered it in the show last end of the week. We had a couple of letters that were sent in and I read them, and one of them pointed out that the death rate in the U.S. due to poverty is 4.5% of all deaths that occur in the country. So the point is, yes, the virus is very concerning, and it has a death rate, and we're tracking it, and we're counting it. But poverty and something on the order of a Great Depression is what many people are saying is coming. It's got a death toll to it also. It's not just about opening up a business. It's about keeping an economy going. That in part of having a healthy economy is having healthy people that aren't dying as a result. We'll see where all this goes. Anyhow, at the top of the hour, we're going to take a detailed look at the impacts on business locally. Joe Wallace from Coachella Valley Economic Partnership will be here. They've just done a survey. I think they've just completed their second one or in the process of completing their second one, talking about, hey, do you think your business is going to be open when this is all done? And I guarantee you, you'll be driving down the street and you're going to see a very prominent, iconic business, and you're going to look at it and say, wow, I remember when they were open. Too bad they didn't survive. And in case you're wondering, the questions come up, well, how does this stack up to 2008? Remember 2008? Everybody's getting thrown out of their homes and we're all in poverty or things were bad. Well, you know, by every account, David Reddy, city manager for Palm Springs, said unabashedly, no, this is going to make 2008 look like really, really good times. So, no, this is very, very serious. You've got way too much stopped and going on way too long. And so, if you're one of those out there that think just lock everything down, stay put, this talk about opening up these businesses or even talk about the impact is not something that you want to hear, you really need to start to consider what's going to happen when people are sitting home with no income, they've lost their houses, the banks have foreclosed. Anybody know a bank that's not going to foreclose on people? Or the landlord said, hey, sorry, you got to get out. Or and even if the state comes through with continued protections for renters, at some point in time, the state going to tell the bank, sorry, you can't throw them out either? When's that ever happened? People, you know, can't make the car payment. Can't make their payment on their business. So anyway, we're going to take a look at all that. I'm looking at the stack. I tell you, the stress, it really starts to wear on you. And I had my fill of it last night. I tell you, I just said, that's it. I got to turn this off. And and we have a hair salon and we're fine. We've been real good about practicing savings and everything else. But I know I'm hearing from the hair salons here, and they see this article out of, a statement from the it's in the Sacramento Bee. You won't be able to get a haircut in California for months, said Governor Newsom. That's the article I'm looking at. And, he said haircuts are off the table right now. All right, so you're sitting at home going, well, when am I going to get my hair cut? Months from now? Does that sound tragic? Think about being a shop owner, paying the rent, trying to keep your salon going. Now you're the landlord saying, hey, don't pay the rent. Or the restaurant, or anybody else. So, I don't know. I'm going to just start rambling on the same I did at the top of the hour. But we're going to move into hour two and some other subjects. This is Russ Betts at iHub Radio. Coming up next, Joe Wallace from Coachella Valley Economic Partnership. And we're back.